Hi, everyone. I'm Josh Nunn.
And I'm Crystal Kessler.
And I'm Justine Hall.
And you're listening to our latest edition of Millennial Mondays, where we explore interesting topics, trends, and key drivers inside one of the world's largest living generations, millennials. Today, we wanted to talk about marketing to millennials, understanding tomorrow's biggest consumer. So today, we're kind of going to talk a very broad overview about who millennials are, defining our cohort, a lot of the characteristics that define how we make purchasing decisions and why we are the way we are. And then we also wanted to provide some practical ways to market and implement some marketing strategies into whether it's a small business or perhaps you just want to learn more about how to market and understand the largest living generation.
It's important to even understand the exact parameters of who is a millennial and who is the next generation, which is Gen Z. So it was kind of challenging in finding something that has a specific year sort of parameter as to if you're born between these years, you're a millennial, because there's no cut and dry sort of answer. I think in some of the research I was reading, the only real specific years for generations would be the baby boomers. But I found some good research from Pew Research, and they define millennials as anyone born between 1981 and 1996. And anyone born from 1997 onward is part of a new generation, which is Gen Z. And the oldest Gen Zer is already 23 right now. So that was kind of interesting. So we are definitely on the lower, younger end of the millennial generation, probably almost closer to Gen Z, which is fascinating to me.
I call us Millenzies.
Oh, yeah. You heard it here first. Crystal's going to coin it, Millenzies. And the Pew Research study that I read said, we believe 1996 is a meaningful cutoff between millennials and Gen Z for a number of reasons, including key political, economic, and social factors that define the millennial generation's formative years. Social media and constant connectivity, on-demand entertainment, and communication are innovations that millennials adapted as they came to age. But for those born after 96, these were largely assumed. And so we're going to talk a lot more about the importance of social media and marketing, but those are just some good ways to get started in understanding, okay, who we're talking about when we're talking about millennials, and also the importance of realizing that there is a whole nother generation coming up right behind millennials as well.
And that's really good that you discussed the cutoff between millennials and Gen Z, because there's a lot of different kinds of factors, socioeconomic, political, geopolitical factors that kind of influence how millennials think now because of the environment they grew up in.
Yes.
And so that's one of the things we wanted to start off with talking is defining the millennial cohort, including Gen Z a little bit. So we'll talk about them as well. But I did a show with Jim a number of months ago last year, and we did a show on millennials talking about money habits, values, and motivations.
Yes, and I'll be sure to link to that where this podcast is posted on financialsense.com, so you can listen to that as well if you haven't already.
And one of the things that we talked about were a lot of the factors that play into the millennial cohort. So for one, if we're talking about money factors, there's this thing called the millennial mindset, and that is the reality that millennials are actually very risk-averse, believe it or not. And a lot of things play into this. One of them is the geopolitical and economic landscape that they've grown up in as kids. So millennials, if you think about it, have really actually experienced some pretty significant events throughout their lifetime. They've been around to see the terrorist attacks that happened on 9/11. They've seen a couple of wars, including the Iraq War and the Afghan War in the 2000s. Along with that, the economic environment hasn't been super rewarding, at least for the time that they've been alive. So we've witnessed our parents experience two significant bear markets. And so we've had to watch our parents battle through recessions and perhaps get laid off, have to live more frugally, things like that. And so all of these things has led to a generation that is more prone to risk aversion. And so what we're seeing is more millennials that are actually more fiscally conservative, and they're less willing to invest in the stock market.
And I think an interesting point in that too is that for a lot of millennials, they were graduating or just entering the job market right as the Great Recession hit. And I think, as you were saying, Josh, that played a huge role in this risk aversion as well.
And that's actually a really good point, because as millennials have graduated from high school or college and they're now working, even inflation is like some of the lowest rates of inflation we've seen in decades. So whereas a previous generation that might have graduated college, they could have seen interest rates that were 10% or 12%. Mm-hmm. So when you put your money in a savings account, it's really growing for you versus, say, one of our generational cohorts might have graduated college and interest rates were 3%. So your ability to save has been a lot lower. And another thing we wanted to touch on, too, is a couple of statistics that we find are pretty interesting when we're talking about the millennial cohort with respect to money habits. So one of them, believe it or not, millennials are actually very likely to set savings goals more than any other generation. However, the flip side of that is they're also very unlikely to invest in the stock market, mostly because of distrust in the financial system, because of what we've seen our parents experience. They probably also don't know enough about investing to really understand the benefit. And when it comes to purchasing decisions, millennials are three times more likely than baby boomers to actually seek out opinions on products and services before trying them out. So we'll talk about this more when we kind of get into marketing strategies, but reviews, blogs, things like that are really, really important when you're trying to market a product or a service to a millennial individual.
One other thing that we've also discussed on past shows too is just the fact that millennials are coming into major financial responsibilities, including student debt, and that's something that we've heavily covered, but also saving for future goals and having an obligation to act more responsibly with their money and spending habits kind of plays into this whole risk averse and why we are the way that we are when it comes to saving and investing. And we've covered this as well, too, with when it comes to financial advisors and millennials. They feel like they don't have enough to invest or that they don't know how to go about it and find the right advisor. So it's just something that millennials have in the back of their mind that is just harder to, I don't know, get out there.
Yeah. And I think, too, if a millennial did have the money to invest, I think another common thing that we've kind of found in research is that millennials want to do it on their own, or they want to find the research and not necessarily have to go to someone who maybe they don't align with or who they're not sure if they can trust, right? I think trust is a big factor of that as well. And so millennials are more of, I want to do the research and do it myself.
So for our industry, this is being heavily seen in the whole robo-advisory space, right? So a lot of people that don't want to work with a human advisor, they want to do it themselves, they can work with the robo-advisor and they have that self-independence, right?
Right,
and they
feel the rise of even online banking as well and all of these different services, I think, really came about because of millennials and those habits. So,
yeah. And then the other thing that comes to mind is we often prioritize what's most important to us when it comes to our discretionary spending. And millennials are actually coming into 2020 have a purchasing power projected to reach $1.4 trillion, which is just absurd. That's such a high number. So we do have the money. We do have the money to invest. We do have the money to put out there. Mm-hmm. It's just I guess millennials just really don't know where to go or who to turn to. And they really need that outside support and this like hand holding almost.
Yeah, but maybe that's a great opportunity for businesses as well to sort of understand that and be able to adapt to that.
And that's an excellent point because, like you mentioned previously, Justine, the oldest millennial, I believe, is 39, and the youngest is turning 24 this year.
Yes.
So as they are getting into their working careers, they're starting to make more money. So it's inevitable that millennials are going to be a huge factor in the global economy, making purchasing decisions. And so that $1.4 trillion is just going to continue growing as they make more and more money throughout their career. So knowing what millennials spend their money on, why they spend their money on, is really, really important to know, especially if you're looking to start a business or if you're already in a business and you're looking to find new ways to market to younger generations. So along the same lines, talking about money habits, we also want to talk about values, which have also influenced how millennials think and how they approach purchasing decisions. And this will kind of help us get to the heart of some valuable marketing strategies that can help you.
Another interesting survey we found, which we mentioned a little bit earlier, is that we as millennials are the least trusting generation. There was a general social survey conducted by the Pew Research Center in 2014. And one of the questions they asked was, generally speaking, would you say that most people can be trusted or that you can't be too careful in dealing with people? 40% of boomers and 31% of Gen Xers said that generally speaking, yes, most people can be trusted. However, and I think this is really interesting, and I was surprised when I read this, only 19% of millennials agreed. So only 19% of millennials think that, generally speaking, people can be trusted.
I was talking with my girlfriend last night about the flip side of that study as well, looking at three different individuals, a parent, a friend, and a financial advisor. Which person do you trust more? And there's actually a study out there that looks at, across different generations, who they trust more, right? Mm-hmm. So looking at a boomer, they actually place more of their trust statistically throughout the study. I think it was through the Pew Research Center. Financial advisors, then friends, and then their parents last.
Interesting.
Millennials are actually the exact opposite. They put more trust in their parents, more trust in their friends, mm-hmm. and the least amount of trust in a financial professional, which
That's
represents a huge opportunity yeah. for yeah. us as planners, young planners,
right.
To develop trust mm-hmm. with our own generation.
Now, when you talk about this, is it just for financial advice or just advice in general?
Financial advice, to be specific, yeah. So when you're when you're like, okay, I'm wanting to purchase a car or I need to save money for a house,
right. yeah.
who are you going to turn to for that advice? Your parents, your friends, or a financial advisor?
Well, I would go to a financial advisor, but that's just me.
Contact us today.
That also plays into the fact that millennials haven't been subjected or helped by too many financial advisors and don't know that that's somebody that they can turn to and reach out to for that type of advice. They've only known their parents and they've only known their friends. So, of course, they're going to reach out to the people who they know and they trust. But I also feel like some advisors have this poor mentality towards millennials as if they're not as important. And I hate to break it to you, but we are so important and yeah. we are coming into the biggest phases of our lives and transition periods and growing in our career. So it's something that I think advisors really need to shift towards and start to pay more attention to millennials.
Yes, especially with the youngest millennials, I think we said turning 24. The time is now to embrace yeah. millennials because, you know, as we've said, the spending power is only going to get greater and they're going to need more help. And so it's not, you can no longer shy away from millennials and be like, oh, we'll deal with them later. They have no money. You know, it is yeah. an important thing to start thinking about now. And I think that's sort of why we wanted to do this podcast, is that it is an important thing to really start thinking about and considering in your business now.
And the reality is, and this isn't new news to anyone, but there's going to be a massive, at least for our industry, a massive wealth transfer of mm-hmm. almost $35 trillion dollars from the oldest generation that's still alive and moving on to now the next youngest generation, which will be the Gen Xers and millennials. So if millennials don't trust financial advisors, they don't understand how to manage their money. Inheritances could be lost because they mm-hmm. don't know how to steward an inheritance yeah. or a large sum of wealth. All those kinds of things are really, really important to think about and within the context of this massive wealth transfer that we expect to see within the next couple of decades. So continuing on with values, we talked about how millennials are actually one of the least trusting generations. They're also one of the most educated, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So among all the living generations right now, over 61% of millennials have at least some level of college education.
And student loans.
Yeah.
As a flip
Plenty
side of that.
Of student loans to prove that they're
yes.
educated. And that's probably all we have, right?
And just to point out, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, millennials carry $1 trillion in student debt.
So we contribute $1.4 trillion to the economy, but we have $1 trillion in debt.
Yikes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, boy. Well, that also speaks to a lot of the issues that are facing, especially the political climate right mm-hmm. now, too, with how do we answer student loans and how do we go about slow wage growth?
Right. It's only going to become more important.
Right. Mm-hmm. Lastly, when it comes to values, millennials have also become very accustomed to having flexibility, instant access, and we're really used to globalization more so than any previous generation. The best example I can give to this is Apple. So one of my old marketing professors in university actually referred to millennials as the Apple generation,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Smartphones, Apple Watches, things like that. So the average millennial, think about this, was 18 years old when Apple released the first iPhone in 2007. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, I remember that super mm-hmm. well. I was not 18, but I do remember. I do remember that. And I think it's interesting, too, because millennials are digital natives and Gen Z is like social media native. And so for Gen Zers, they only know smartphones. So this mm-hmm. generation coming up, they're only knowledge is everyone has smartphones, everyone has iPhones, and it's used as a communication tool more than it is a sharing device as well, too, which I think is fascinating.
No, and it's funny because my mom refused to get an iPhone for so long, and she would carry this flip phone and get so upset with the flip phone all the time because it would randomly call people. She's like, but I refuse to get an iPhone. Finally, we convinced her, and she hasn't left the iPhone game since. So. You know,
my dad was the same way. He had a flip phone for years, and it was his favorite thing. People would ask him if he got it from a museum. He was very proud of it, and he, too, has now converted to the iPhone world. So
I think when the first remember when the iPod Touch came out? There was a kid in my middle school that was the first one to have one. And I remember seeing him at lunch, and kids were surrounding him like, what is this magical device with this touchscreen? It's so beautiful.
Oh my gosh.
And then come 2 years later, like my first or second year of high school, every student, I swear, had either an iPhone or some kind of iPod Touch.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's, absolutely. I mean, it now exploded. That's not even in the U.S. It's global. Smartphones are just becoming ubiquitous. And that's something that is driving these trends as well.
So as a millennial, from a young age, we've become really accustomed and comfortable with smartphones and instant access. So as we transition, we now wanted to just touch on a few characteristics that are shaping today's marketing strategies. So one, millennials want to participate in marketing. This is a little bit different than how marketing strategies have worked in the past. Millennials are not just willing to be passive consumers. They want to be active in branding. They want to be active in product development, things like that. So this generation really wants to actively participate. We want to co-create, and we want to be included as partners in the brands that we love. And this is really what's now being called the participation economy. So when it comes to branding and developing marketing strategies, the old model kind of relied on interruptions. So introducing a product that is groundbreaking, it might provide a large reaction and a shock factor, a wow factor. It would be targeted by using big promises. If you use this product, you'll live for 50 years longer, kinds of things, right? And it was kind of gauged towards passive consumers. So you buy it once, great. You need to buy it again, you come back and you buy it again, right? This new model of marketing is much more different. It involves engagement, interaction. It's meant to provide personal gestures towards people that want to buy a product, prospective customers, things like that. And the new model also includes a lot of room for active co-creation, brands and products.
I found this really interesting when Josh was first telling us about this because it makes a lot of sense in thinking about how marketing's changed. Would you say that like subscription boxes are a good example of this kind of, you can personalize them, you're constantly getting them, it's not just like a one and done sort of thing, whether it's food services or anything like that?
Totally. And in addition, Q&A or like feedback or sometimes companies will release product surveys.
Yes.
Those are huge, where companies want feedback from their users, from their consumers, to say, hey, if you were to develop this same product, what would you do differently? Because then it really gets to the heart and it allows the consumer even to feel powerful.
Yeah, and like they're heard.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Secondly, millennials are also heavily influenced by their peers. So I know for me, before I'm going to purchase something, I'll probably look for a review or I'll ask a friend or a colleague about a certain product or service. You guys do the same?
Definitely. And using blogs too is something that we've mentioned is a really powerful way for brands to market their products is in blog posts. And also I went on a trip earlier this month and was looking for packing cubes. And that seems like a super easy thing to buy. But I even caught myself researching best packing cubes to buy or best quality and, you know, looking up different reviews and guides for such a simple product. So I definitely have done that myself. And so I think that that is an important one too. We look at reviews, we care about what the quality is, what other people have said about them. And so I think that that is a really important factor.
Yeah, no, and I definitely reach out to all my friends when it comes to things that I know that they've tried. And if you think about it too, one thing that came to mind when we were talking about the participation economy and how they work with engagement and then engaging participants to kind of become more loyal to their brand. It used to be a thing a while back with Mary Kay, but I feel like it's coming out more and more where now you see Arbonne and you're getting all of these individuals or millennials to kind of follow your product product and then reach out to their friends and market through their groups of people. And you're seeing that more and more these days. And now I'm even seeing it with this hair product, Monet. And it's just, it's so much. And I mean, it's a great strategy because you're getting people to market your product to other people. The only thing is sometimes it can take people a little bit by surprise and taken back because they're too aggressive or they're too in your face. So you kind of have to weigh the pros and cons of that. But sometimes I feel like that's a great marketing strategy and it works, especially if you have a good product, you know?
Another characteristic that's shaping today's marketing strategies for millennials is also the fact that millennials are digital natives. So we kind of talked about this earlier. We've been born into an era when smartphones are abundant and texting is a fixture in communication. Millennials frequently speak the digital language. Mm-hmm. So that is an essential part of a marketing strategy when you're trying to target the new millennial cohort that's up and coming, right? And also, this millennial mindset, too, that's kind of overtaken popular culture. I think if you want to know what's going to be hot with Americans tomorrow, it's really, really important that brands and companies are paying attention to what is popular among millennials today.
So some of the best practices to effectively market to millennials. Millennials are now no longer in college. They're actively pursuing their careers and their goals. The youngest millennial is 24 right now, and the oldest is 39 in 2020. Millennials are very high tech. They're socially minded, and we don't respond to the traditional advertising anymore. Like, when you think about it, how many millennials actually pay for cable and watch the commercials anymore?
Yeah, I don't have cable at home.
Right. And if
I don't
you
have
Yeah.
Exactly. And right. And if you do, you're going to record the shows and then you're going to fast forward through the commercials. So I feel like that's kind of become a thing of the past. Mm-hmm. And we don't listen to radio anymore. We listen to Spotify or Apple Music, and podcasts, I feel like, are the new radio.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So it's just like you don't have those commercials that baby boomers are accustomed to or really like watch for. Half the time, I don't even know movies that are coming out anymore. I have to like look it up on my apps just to see what's current and what's because they're all on the commercials.
And those are also just movies. I mean, most entertainment is done through streaming now.
Yep.
Yes.
So when did the new show come out? Not when does the new movie come out? Or, I mean, that's kind of the reality.
TV shows even. I mean, aside from a few live shows that I know a lot of people watch, most even TV watching now is done through streaming services, and there's so many more coming out. It feels like every month, whether Apple TV just came out, Apple TV Plus, I can't remember what it's called, or like Disney Plus, like all of these new streaming services, and they just announced a Friends reunion is coming for the new HBO streaming service. Mm-hmm. So it's only going to get bigger from here, I think.
Which is a whole other like rabbit trail, but movie theaters are now trying to up their experience to cater towards millennials.
All the food that you can eat in movie theaters now.
Right. So one of the strategies is to really optimize your mobile reach. So when I'm thinking about mobile, I'm thinking about the online presence or your app presence that you have. Online shopping has become so big for millennials, and it's really leading the pack for millennials. I know I shop online more and more because I'm just very busy and on the go, and buying products online and having them shipped to my house makes things so much easier. And according to a UPS study of millennial shopping habits, there's only 11% of millennials that have reported that their next purchase would be at a physical retail store, which is honestly kind of shocking to me, but I truly believe it.
Yeah, I believe it too. I mean, I can't remember the last time I bought something in a store, honestly.
I'm such a totally different mindset. I love going into stores and like actually trying things on, looking at things. But obviously, I also buy things online. But I think I am a little bit of an anomaly when it comes to being a millennial because I still want a tangible book. And I occasionally would even read a magazine or a newspaper. So
when it comes to shopping for clothes, I totally agree. But if it's something like a brand that I know and love and I know my size already, I'm going to actually just order it online and have it shipped
to me.
Well,
and to that point, too, I've come across a lot of clothing brands and other types of brands as well that don't have brick and mortar stores, and that allows them to cut down on their costs a lot. And then they're offering really awesome, great quality products at a fraction of the cost. And, you know, there's one company I may have talked about it before called Everlane, and they break down the cost of their products, how much it costs to make it, how much it costs for overhead, what you're paying for. So it's super transparent, which is what we've been talking about. And they only have a few, you know, brick and mortar stores in like San Francisco and New York, but they have a great return program so you can still buy clothes and products. And so anyway, it's just a very much, I think, a millennially marketed brand.
Yeah.
I think that's huge. Yeah. Optimizing your mobile reach, I think to sum all that up, mm-hmm. if you don't have an e-commerce platform, you're really going to get left behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen a lot of blogs that I've been reading for years. Now they have e-commerce platforms where you can buy products that they've recommended or that they like, because that's also getting sponsored money for them. So I think that you're right. E-commerce is definitely going to grow in the coming years.
Yeah. Outside of optimizing your mobile reach, having multi-platform content ready, I think, is also really important. So this would include like having articles about your products or having infographics, maybe working with some kind of data visualization mm-hmm. company that can help take a lot of your research and your data and making it visual and understandable to potential clients. Having a polished website goes a long way. And videos are huge. In fact, about 55% of millennials are actually watching videos several times a day and on multiple devices. So having a multi-platform content is really, really important from a branding and a marketing perspective. The third best practice for effectively marketing to millennials is to offer personalization, and I'm going to add customization. So 85% of millennials are more likely to make a purchase if it's personalized to their interests. So I often think of car manufacturers. If you go to Toyota's website or Acura, typically you can choose a base model, but then it gives you this really cool customization tool, and you can build your own car.
Kind of like Tesla too, right? You can do the same thing. Yeah.
Think also Coca-Cola. They recently did a Share a Coke campaign. So you ever go into like a gas station and you see those Cokes with the names on them?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That was a marketing strategy that they took to appeal to millennials to get them to buy Cokes that had, oh, hey, it's got Josh on it. Or look, this one has Crystal on it.
I never saw one that said Justine, though. Just letting Coca-Cola know.
All strategies that companies today have used to go after personalization and customization. Amazon is another one. If you ever go on Amazon and you see purchase recommendations, how do they know that?
Yeah. Well, or the frequently bought together where it's, you know, you bought this product, so why not make it a bundle with these two other products?
Exactly. Spotify is another excellent example. You can curate and make your own playlists and share them with your friends.
Yep. Yeah.
So companies today that are ahead are really going after customization, and they understand that it's very important to millennials.
Mm-hmm. I think that having a social media presence is also huge, and one of the most underutilized form of social media, I think that's just overlooked, is Instagram. There's so many things that you can do with Instagram, and they have business accounts where you can link your products directly to your website, and so many millennials and Gen Zers, they're all on Instagram. They're all about the focus of Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook. You know, it's TikTok now. It's just become so big, and I feel like that's such an easy way to reach out and follow and kind of promote your product, and it's just, again, underutilized.
Well, and Instagram now has this feature where it's an in-app purchase, so you don't even have to leave the Instagram app to make a purchase. So if you're looking at, I don't know, there's a sponsored post for a pair of shoes and you click on it, not even sponsored. It could just be that that company posted the link to their pair of shoes. You click it. It's not opening up the browser in Safari or whatever your internet app is on your phone. It's still in the Instagram app, but now you're on their website. You're making the purchase and you've never left the Instagram app yet.
Yeah, no, it's so true. It's so helpful too. Another thing is to be authentic when it comes to millennials. So millennials do remain loyal and value authenticity. The sooner you build a relationship and a deep connection with a millennial, the better, because they'll continue to purchase from you as an adult. I know with myself personally, when I trust somebody and they gain my trust, I'm always going to go to them. So if I find some, like, for example, I redid all my carpets in my house, and the first place I went to was Lowe's, and I automatically met this sales guy and I was like, wow, I really trust him. I'm only going with him. But then it was taking weeks and I couldn't get my carpets in. So one of my coworkers was like, well, why don't you just try to reach out to some other companies and see if they can get in sooner? And I was like, no. I met this guy. He was great. So helpful. I need him. But then, of course, I kept thinking about it. And then I ended up finding another company even better. And from now on, I'll always go to them. They were so helpful and they measured and then installed the next day. It was fantastic. But again, for future, I'm always going to want to go to the person that I trust, and I'm going to go to this carpet company if I ever need new carpets.
Right. I've built that loyalty with you. Mm-hmm. And in terms of looking at brands and different companies that have done effective marketing for millennials, we all found this study from USC all about marketing for millennials. And we're going to link out to that where this podcast is posted as well. But it looked at three companies, Warby Parker, Tom's, and Uber. And if you don't know, Warby Parker is a reasonably priced, fashionable eyeglass e-retailer. And it uses marketing strategies that are really effective for millennials. And I love Warby Parker. That's where I've been getting my glasses for the past 3 years, I think. It's much less expensive than going through your optometrist. And how it works is that you can go on their website, select five different frames that you like. They'll send them to you for free so you can try them on, see which ones you think look best. You send them back, still free. Then you send them your prescription and they'll send you a pair of glasses with that prescription in it. They do have a lot more brick and mortar stores now, so you can go in and try on glasses there as well. But I love Warby Parker and I've gotten a couple people in our office to also switch and start wearing Warby Parker glasses as well.
Yeah, actually, I'm included in that. I believe when I first tried out Warby Parker, I loved all the options available to me.
Yep.
And I have a hard time narrowing. I am so terrible at narrowing down options because I just get overwhelmed and I'm like, man, I want all of them.
Warby Parker is capitalizing on this, that 70% of millennials agree. Like we said, the economy has impacted their ability to save and spend money. And so having a more cost-effective, affordable option is a big win. Also, millennials' preference for social and environmental responsibility. 80% of millennials are willing to purchase products with a social or environmental benefit versus 83% of the average. And Warby Parker they donate a pair of glasses to other people in need of glasses. Tom's is another company, which I think everyone's familiar with. They donate a pair of shoes for every pair of shoes that are purchased. They were also founded in 2006, so right at the cusp of millennials. And millennials also have a preference for brands that are associated with a cause, which is 91% of millennials would rather purchase from a brand that supports a cause versus 85% of the U.S. average. And then Uber as well, which I think everyone is also pretty familiar with. And that was really at the heart of millennials wanting to save money. So 15% of millennials believe it's extremely important for them to have a car, while another 25% report it's important, but not a priority. And I know a lot of people I've seen who've sold their cars and who live in big cities and just use Uber or public transportation. Again, if you're not in a really big city, that's probably not possible. Even in San Diego, it would be really challenging to only get around on public transportation, unfortunately. So it depends where you live for that one. All of these websites, they're really clean, visually appealing, and they're getting at the things that are most important to millennials, whether it's a social or an environmental benefit, making it a cost-effective choice. And that's getting at the heart of what matters most to millennials.
And I think another thing that matters a lot to millennials going off of all these companies that have done so well is really customer service and the experience that they get from that. 74% of millennials would switch to a different retailer or brand if they have a negative customer experience, which I completely agree with. However, on the flip side, millennials are likely or far more likely to share a positive customer experience that they've had than a negative one. So we're very positive people. And that was coming directly from American Express, a survey that was done by American Express. But I thought that was super interesting.
So in summary, some of the best practices to effectively market to millennials, like we talked about, were optimizing your mobile reach, having a multi-platform content ready for your customers, offering personalization and customization of your products, having a social media presence, and lastly, being authentic with the people that you're trying to market to. Mm-hmm. Don't beat around the bush. Tell them exactly how you work and the truth about how you started and things that they would want to know if you were buying a product.
Right. And I think that gets at the heart of it too, is authenticity, making them feel connected and fulfilled and like they agree with the businesses that they're supporting, I think is an important part too. And from a study from EY, there was a great summation quote about marketing to millennials and also considering Gen Z. And it's understanding who these generations are and what they want now gives businesses the ability to predict what people of all ages will expect in the coming years. Being successful in this will require a nimbleness, flexibility, and adaptability to keep up and deliver on the needs of these generations of contradictions. So making sure that we're considering millennials and also Gen Z that's coming up right behind them as well and will continue to influence marketing and the ways in which we can best reach these demographics.
Well, that's all for this edition of Millennial Mondays. If you have any comments or question about this podcast, feel free to give us a call at 1-888-486-3311. 3939.
And you can also contact us on our website, financialsense.com. You can find Crystal's email, Josh's email, my email there if you want to email us specifically, or just send us a message about what you thought about the podcast or anything else you want to hear about.
Yeah, and if you ever have any suggestions on next podcast as to what you guys want to hear, feel free to reach out, send us an email.
Yeah, we would love that. We actually got an idea for marketing to millennials from listener feedback. Someone really wanted to know about what makes millennials tick and how you can better market to millennials. And so we want to help everyone as much as we can. And so if you have any questions or suggestions for future topics, please do reach out and let us know.
Well, with that in mind, we're out of time. Until Millennial Mondays return, we hope you have a fantastic week.
Happy Monday.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.